you at Mahama Samahani only specialise in family businesses. What, I suppose, what makes family businesses different, and what makes running family businesses different in broad terms?
Oh gosh, well, there's a lot of things. I think the family businesses has an added layer, I think, of issues that other businesses don't have. That they have the advantage or disadvantage of the people being involved in it, not only being business associates and partners, but being family members, and that brings a different set of issues, which can be good and bad. It means that sometimes the discussions can extend beyond the boardroom and back to home, and vice versa. And issues that may arise outside the boardroom can drift on into the boardroom. So it is a different type of business, and I guess we've, over the last 20 odd years, dealt with lots of family businesses and seen a lot of the issues coming through, and how they both benefit and cause issues within the family business sector.
Right. Why are there so many family businesses in Northern Ireland, do we think? I mean, is there a larger proportion here than there are in other parts of the UK? Does anyone know? And if so, why would that be?
I think the Northern Ireland economy, if you look at the private sector, it's largely made up of family businesses. There's lots of entrepreneurs and people historically who just had to go out to make a living. And those businesses have survived because in Northern Ireland, the family business is a real strong work ethic. And it's not just your 9-to-5 jobs, it's working all hours, weekends. And we've seen in the bank, we've seen those businesses evolve and grow. And we've seen them going down to second and third generation, and the private sector here is mainly made up of them.
Yeah, although I think there's about 3/4 of the businesses in Northern Ireland are family businesses, and but actually, do you think that's reflective of the UK? We are a reflection of the UK.
Yeah,
very similar in terms of percentages.
Yeah. Is there a difference? You talk about Una, family businesses. When it comes to financing family businesses, is it much the same as financing any other business, or are there different considerations too?
But there's always different considerations with each business, but we have no issue with funding family businesses. As I say, they're largely successful. They have a strong work ethic. We look at succession, and that's something we would often talk to our family businesses about. We look at their trusted advisors. We look at growth plans. We treat them as a normal business, but we look at all those factors, and we're getting very much the second generation and third generation family businesses. We are getting closer to the people who are the successors. We also look at family businesses bringing in outside professionals, and we would encourage that. We would encourage them to work very closely with their accountants and bring on that expertise. But funding there's no problem with funding family businesses. We would have seen family businesses growing organically here in Northern Ireland, but now as we come out of recession, we see a renewed confidence, and we see family businesses having a strategic growth plan, and that confidence and the growth is giving them options to grow by acquisition, and we have funded a number of those. So we work very, very closely with family businesses. Danske Bank every day, everything we do is about family businesses, largely.
Although there tends to be an aversion in family businesses sometimes, compared to other non-family businesses, about pursuing funding for growth. There's this sense of holding on to what we have, and they create this glass ceiling, perhaps, of their own making, that maybe in some ways stifles or stunts potential growth. And I think predominantly when you look at it, family businesses tend to have that traditional relationship with the bank. And maybe in today's world aren't looking at other ways of financing growth as well. And that's maybe due to a lack of knowledge or a lack of trust as well.
I think there's a trend too, though, for this current generation to sort of reinvest and maybe not take out or extract as much funds from their own business. Mm-hmm. And in order to sort of be able to grow that essentially themselves without relying on external funding as well. So I think just from speaking to a few other organisations such as yourselves, they're quite keen to do that, and I suppose that shows confidence to you if you were looking for external funding as well. There is that element of not extracting everything now, but also thinking beyond today.
Yeah. Suppose there's the assumption that every business is hell bent on growing, whereas a family business might be content and they might not want to grow. They might not have shareholders constantly driving increased revenue, reduction in costs. Maybe that's something that not every family business, they have the luxury of saying, actually, we don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they maybe don't grow, or maybe they create a glass ceiling, but maybe they're comfortable with that glass ceiling too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe the difference for us. If you're working on behalf of shareholders or investors, then obviously you don't have that option.
Mm. Yeah. We certainly see more confidence in Northern Ireland generally, and more people heading out and looking for acquisitions and trying to grow by acquisition rather than organically. And Paul's just completed one last Friday, so that's a perfect example of a family business going actually beyond our shores here to expand.
Yeah, and I suppose just on the back of that, the main reason why we'll have done that is because of the company now is 45 years old, started by my father back in 71, which wouldn't have been a great time to start to kick off an office furniture business in Belfast, I guess. I think because of our size of population, and whilst we cover all of Ireland and have a presence on both sides of the border, I think our need now is to stabilise things for the whole business and for all the people that work for it. With 92 employees now, it's a big animal. Well, from my point of view, it's a big animal to feed.
Mm-hmm.
From whenever I started 32 years ago, there were 6 of us. So we've gone to that extent, and I need to smooth all the peaks and troughs and try and get a steadier business to run. And whenever you have a place across the water like Scotland, which is the same population as the island of Ireland, that's the next best place to go and try and generate that. So for us, the easiest way actually to break into that was to acquire, rather than to try and just start ourselves and wait for 10 years and see how it goes. And an opportunity came up. So I don't know if Richard's the man in the chair, so he's going to point us in the direction, but I think that the big thing for us was, as a family business, as would have been, I wouldn't really describe it now as an actual family business with that number of people working for it, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
But we brought in outside assistance by way of non-exec director to get external viewpoints in the business, because I think between me and the other members of the board, 10 years ago, we had about 1,000 years of experience of working for Alpha, but none of us had experience outside the industry. So by bringing that external in, allowed us to look at things differently. An acquisition in the depths of the recession was the best way to go.
So that really worked for you, the bringing in of the, I mean, that was something I was going to mention further on. So the bringing in of external experience.
Yeah, and I think if all things been equal, I think in family business that's a really difficult decision for people.
Well, that's
to make.
What I was thinking. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, because everything's very personal and private, and whilst it's really difficult for the first people to start, and you're maybe second generation in your business, and you know the founders, they took huge risks starting from scratch. They probably remortgaged their houses and everything to get things going, and did without to actually run get a business off the ground. I think whenever second generations are in it, I think there's an added pressure that failure is not even on the cards. It's not an option. And it's not that you're trying to outdo the first generation. In fact, I describe myself as a bit of a caretaker now, in that I'm trying to caretake what my dad started and just make sure that we continue to prosper and keep it safe. But that is the having the external viewpoint coming into the business and a challenge at board level to people who know our business inside out, but to say, look, you know, at the time of the recession, that probably like most people's businesses around the table, our industry dropped by 45% in 6 months in 2008.
Mm.
And the only way we could rescue the business was to acquire our biggest competitors, which we did in Southern Ireland, in Belfast, and now in Scotland. So we've done that 3 times.
Mm.
To be fair, with Paul's company's help as well, and advice, which has been 100% sound the whole way through.
Just in terms of the family business entity or definition thereof, in terms you were saying you've brought somebody else in or non-exec director, etc. In terms of ownership and so forth, have they now got ownership of part of the company, or do you mean just as a non-exec or a senior management employee?
No, purely non-exec, no shareholding at all. basically charge you monthly fees for their to cover their expenses. To be fair, I think the people at that sort of level are people who have been there and done it, and they've got so much gain over the years of what they've achieved themselves that they actually like coming into a company that is facing a challenge and actually be confident about what they're doing. And that's where we've got the massive benefit. So I don't think people at that level are ever looking for shareholding necessarily, unless it's a total rescue.
I think the other directors in the company or senior managers and so forth that are be deeply rooted in the company.
Yeah.
Are they aspiring to that, or do they reach a ceiling where they think, well, they would look for some sort of...
I think it's a mixture of both. And I think it's good to be open-minded as an owner of a business to consider shareholding for employees, particularly people that are really good, valuable assets for your business. Because, you know, you hear people talking about golden handcuffs and all the rest of it, but I think to have key people in place that will help drive your business forward, and if they see that they've got longer term security as part of your business, you know, at the end of the day, as owners of businesses, what does it matter to us if the small percentage belongs to someone else? If they're the people that are doing the business for you, absolutely, my view on that would be they should be a shareholder at some point or other.
If they're bringing skill sets to the business that you don't have in the family, it's essential to have those people there.
If they're key to the success of the business, definitely. Sure. As a bank, we would have seen a mix. We would see a mix of people. We would have seen shareholders, but also we've seen the entrepreneurs who've retired, have worked very hard, and they want to give something back in terms of advising and supporting family businesses, and there's great people out there who are willing to do that, and they don't necessarily want the equity in the business.
No.
I think that the challenge at the moment in terms of funded business, I think the banks certainly are back in business again, but perhaps more with that chunk of businesses that are maybe more established and that are scaling from a position of good performance and strength and can put the business plan in place and can provide security in many ways as well for borrowing. There's a big chunk of businesses, and again, if we go back to the Northern Ireland economy and look at what we need to do to rebalance it, we need to get new family businesses up and running and started. It's financing and growing startups and early stage businesses, and maybe it's, the bank just aren't back at the table fully there yet.
All banks aren't
back there. So it's again, government and the support structures and the local economic development units and whatnot need to be cognizant of that to make sure that the knowledge and information that there are different ways of funding businesses in the early stages, whether it's some of the new innovative ways like crowdfunding, the likes of the funding circle, the likes of invoice and trade financing and whatnot as well are all innovative ways of and the problem is small startup and early stage businesses just don't know enough about those products. And I think we need to inform them if we're to keep this pipeline of new businesses going.
So. Yeah, that is a challenge for all banks. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no bank that can really go out there and fund a startup. That's not our target market, and that's not our role. But I would have to say, Investa and I have certainly doing a lot of work. The local councils are doing a certain amount of work. They have all pots of money, and they are providing funding, they're providing training workshops. I've been to a number of them, and they're pointing small businesses in the right direction where they can get small amounts of funding. And as a bank, what we tend to do is we tend to offer them relationship management. We maybe can't lend the money, but we're willing to give them a relationship manager to talk to them, to support them, and give them the right advice until they get themselves into the proper structure where we can fund them. So certainly, I would have to say the local councils, and we'll see more of that, and Investa and I supporting them.
Certainly more awareness now of invoice discounting, debtor finance, that when I started years ago would have been practically unheard of, and would have actually been probably regarded, if you did take it out, that it was kind of bad. But that has come on board big style now, and it's a great methodology for a business to grow when it's small, utilizing the security that's in the debtor book.
We would
see that a lot more.
We would see a lot of that. I mean, we've a growing invoice finance team, and certainly we would be funding, we fund small businesses with that, who've their only asset is their strong debtor book, and we fund some of the largest corporates here in Northern Ireland with invoice finance. So it is a way to go for businesses who don't have assets, certainly.
I was at the Intertrade Ireland Equity or Venture Capital Finance thing last week. They're always trying to push that, but I think that's a bit of a no-no in this scenario, is it? For family businesses to think about equity finance, or is it?
Well,
it has its problems, doesn't it?
It does.
Or has its downsides,
yes.
Yeah, I think that's problems.
Yeah.
That is an even bigger decision.
Yeah, it's a really big decision.
The outside help of the non-exec directors to actually go and look for venture capital for a family business is a massive decision.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
But I mean, it could be right in certain circumstances to help fund something which could otherwise not be funded. But it's, I think it's much more difficult for a family business to do that than a non-family one.
Cool. Couple more, just on your arena, Paul. I mean, tax. If there are specific tax issues for small businesses, is this something that people think enough about, or are they all?
Taxes is always very important for any business, but family business, particularly on extracting money out of a family business, is a key area. And over the years, we have advised lots of businesses on the best way to get money out, and we're just about to hit another big change in taxation with the dividend taxation structure changing from 5th of April. So there's been a lot of talk now in the run up to that about owner-managed and family businesses extracting money out before the 5th of April to make the best use of the existing regime before it changes. And it's going to be a little more penal now on family-owned businesses where the shareholders and directors are one and the same. And dividends has been a route in the past to get money out. It's going to be a little more penal after 5 April on those. So we're talking to a lot of businesses there, and there's a lot of planning goes into just making the best way of extracting funds out of that. The other issue then is at the end, the kind of the inheritance tax issues as well, as to how to make the best use of your investment and how to protect yourself in future against inheritance tax. So tax is just, you know, it's endemic, and it's probably one of the biggest things that we would do as professional advisors that in talking to businesses, tax is always an issue.
Yeah.
The whole tax around the succession as well, which is, you know, again, for to generate more, you know, growth of more locally owned businesses and what have you, government has to step up. Sort of be a little bit, you know, put a regime in place that assists around the whole succession side of things.